Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy speculation and advice. Now, along with the guys from GuillotineLeagues.com, here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to a championship edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian. My co-hosts today are Brian Johnson and Matt Harrison. Hello, guys.
Hi, Charch. Play the sleigh bells. Come on. Tis the season for fantasy championships.
I don't know who would bother to move all my butt. That is not. There we go. Yes, that is more appropriate for the season. Championship edition. If you are still playing, and congratulations if you are. I think if there's a word for the kind of fantasy managers who are live in championship week, it is resourceful. You are the people that have overcome so much adversity this year. There's no way anybody's fantasy team was unscathed by injury and illness and COVID. You pivoted. You made great calls at the last minute. The Saturday deactivation of the player you thought you were starting, and you know, you went to the backup. All the things you had to do to get here. Well earned.
You're just kissing the butt of all the people who are still listening to the show right now, aren't you?
Most importantly, they listen to this show. That's how they got there.
That's a great point. I want to acknowledge up front, because of the holidays, we are taping this show on Thursday. And that just means we've got less information to go on than we normally have, especially around injuries. We're going to do our best, but you may have more current injury information than we've got.
But the good thing is you get to hear the Friday matchups, the Saturday matchups, right. And the Sunday That's matchups.
Right. We are going to try to squeeze them all into this show.
We also risked our lives driving here. So.
We did. In a blizzard, we all got here, I'm happy to say. All right, let's begin with the Friday game. Brian, this is Minnesota at New Orleans.
Yeah, and this is probably the first time anyone's done a Vikings matchup on the show other than you, Charge.
That is true for this year. It certainly is true. And not only that, I don't think we've never taped on a Thursday, history of the show. I don't think we've ever talked about a Friday game, history of the show.
No.
Done a preview for a Friday game. It's all breaking stuff here. We're doing this 26 years. You'd think there would be nothing new left to do.
Well, there is nothing left. Nothing new left to do with Dalvin Cook. You're going to start him still, giving him an A. On the season, the Saints do allow the sixth fewest rushing yards and the fewest touchdowns to opposing running backs. But over the last 2 weeks, they've been trounced by Miles Sanders in the Chiefs' backfield, who have all combined to average 128 rushing yards and 1.5 touchdowns per game. Will Cook's usage get dialed back, though? Probably not. The Vikings are clinging to playoff hopes.
Yeah, it's slim, but they're clinging to it. And I don't think Zimmer can stop himself from running the ball anyway, to his own detriment the past couple of weeks.
And for what it's worth, Cook trails Derrick Henry by 195 yards for the rushing title. Probably not going to make up that ground, but maybe they let him try. Hopefully so. But
Because of that lost game, had Cook played a 16-game schedule,
definitely.
That
would certainly would have helped. Over to the receivers, Justin Jefferson, going to give him a B. There is A upside here. New Orleans is allowing 169 yards per game to receivers over the past three, well above their season average. They've also surrendered four wide receiver touchdowns over that same three-game span. Jefferson will probably deal with Marshawn Lattimore most, but he's not playing so great this year, allowing a passer rating of 105 in his coverage, and he's given up five touchdowns. So a B for Jefferson and a B for Adam Thielen. Even though he's totaled just 50 yards over the last two games, he has scored four touchdowns over his last five, and just mentioned how New Orleans has surrendered four wide receiver touchdowns over their last three. So I like Thielen here, especially going up against Janoris Jenkins. He's on the downslope for sure. The tight ends for Minnesota, Rudolph probably not going to play. Tyler Conklin looked pretty good last week. Irv Smith did not. But they're all on the bench, though. New Orleans has allowed one tight end touchdown over the last nine games, and that went to Travis Kelce. He is not on the Vikings. Lastly, for Minnesota, Kirk Cousins, going to give him a C. Quarterbacks the Saints have faced, starting with the most recent, have been Patrick Mahomes. He shredded them. Jalen Hurts in his first start, not impressive. Matt Ryan with no Julio. Kendall Hilton. Then Matt Ryan when Julio got hurt. Nick Mullins. Nick Foles, Teddy Bridgewater, these are all awful quarterbacks.
They are.
Kirk Cousins is better than those guys. Foles and Bridgewater were able to throw for 250 and two. That should be a safe floor for Cousins, so I'm going to give him a C. Over to the New Orleans side, Alvin Kamara gets a B. Over their last five games, Minnesota has allowed 119 rushing yards and a touchdown per game to opposing running backs. But Minnesota has only allowed one running back receiving touchdown all year, and no back has even hit 40 receiving yards against the Vikes. So don't expect too much from Kamara out of the backfield.
But with Eric Kendricks out, yes, I think that's a huge difference. And Eric Kendricks is arguably, you know, the NFL's one of, if not the best pass coverage linebackers. No Kendricks, I think it's going to be it's green light for Kamara.
Definitely. It's not a green light for Michael Thomas. He is on IR, so you definitely don't want to start him. But that gives a B to Emmanuel Sanders, who has produced at least 76 yards or a touchdown in 6 of 7 games with Breeze at quarterback. The Vikings secondary has played better as of late. Only one opposing wide receiver has topped 65 yards over the last 3 games, but Sanders will see enough volume to warrant a start on Friday. Tre'Quan Smith might as well, but he's very iffy with an ankle injury. I'll give him a C if he plays, but if Smith sits, you might be able to throw a dart at Lil Jordan Humphrey.
Tiny little Jordan Humphrey
scored last week, or Jawan Johnson both saw 4 targets, but Lil Jordan is way more appealing for obvious reasons. I'm going to give Lil Jordan a C if Tre'Quan Smith sits. Why not? And you mentioned Church Eric Kendricks is out. That puts Jared Cook into play with a C. Mm-hmm. Didn't do much last week, but the 5 targets were encouraging. Tight end is a soft spot against the Vikings with Kendricks out, without a doubt. So Cook gets a C with Breeze at quarterback, who also gets a C. The concerns with Breeze are age / ability, health, Taysom Hill, no Michael Thomas. The list goes on. And the Vikings secondary has been much improved over the last month, allowing just 236 passing yards and 1.25 passing touchdowns per game. So just the softest of C's for Drew Brees.
Okay, not to be confused with a C-. That is a straight C right there.
Definitely.
Tampa Bay takes on Detroit, Matt, and Detroit's going to be without their head coach and offensive play caller, Darrell Bevell, or it appears he's going to be that way.
Yeah, I saw that he's
contact tracing.
He's in isolation right now.
Right.
So it's possible that he could maybe be calling it from a booth. Up in isolation, they got him in like a seal.
Hermetically sealed like John Travolta in that 70s movie Boy in the Bubble. That would be so awesome to have Darrell Bevell in a bubble on the field calling plays.
Maybe they cart him in like Hannibal Lecter on like a two-wheeler
on
or something.
A dolly?
Like, yeah.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Be fun. Let's start on the Lions side. I'm going to talk about Stafford in the next segment, but I want to talk about Marvin Jones Jr., who in your fantasy championship, I'm giving an A grade to. And it's kind of worth it. Since week 11, the Bucs have allowed wide receivers to hit yardage totals of 269, 163, 145, and 130. And then Russell Gage even chipped in 68 in a score last week. Jones had 12 targets last week, which is equal to what the other 3 Lions wide receivers had combined. By the way, Kenny Golladay not practicing again this week. So Marvin Jones is the lead dog in the Lions wide receiver room. TJ Hockenson, I'm giving a B grade to. The Bucs defense has softened against the tight end recently, allowing 9 catches for 103 and a score to the Vikings tight ends.
9 times.
Ooh.
9 times.
Yes. And 6 catches for 42 yards and a score to the Falcons tight ends just last week. Hockenson coming off a disappointing week, but prior to last week's stinker.
Very, very disappointing week.
He put up 60 yards or scored in 4 straight prior to that. DeAndre Swift, I'm going to give him a C grade.
Yeah.
He's on field for 2/3 of the snaps. They've definitely been easing him back in as returning from the injury. 82 total yards and 2 scores last week was enough to keep many fantasy owners moving through to the finals. But outside of Dalvin Cook, no running back has topped 50 rushing yards against Tampa Bay since week 2. They've allowed 1 rushing touchdown to a back over the last 5 weeks. Again, that was Dalvin.
God, that's a tough, tough matchup for Swift, who was trending all the right way. And then here in the championship game, you get the best run defense in the NFL.
Yeah, that's not good. There's another running back that I'm going to talk about in the next segment for Tampa as well. But let's talk about the passing game there as Tom Brady. He gets a B grade in this one. The Lions have allowed at least 265 passing yards in 4 straight, and 3 of those 4 quarterbacks tossed a trio of touchdowns or more. The only worry is the Bucs start blowing out the Lions and Brady just stops throwing.
Yeah, but at that point, Brady's got his numbers.
Let's hope so. Although the running situation is pretty tasty.
Yep, it is.
Rob Gronkowski, I'm giving him a C grade. Gronk had 7 targets last week, but Cameron Brate had more receptions and yards. In fact, Gronk's yardage totals over his past 4 have been 25, 102, 2, and 29.
Yeah, he's a little touchdown dependent, Gronk.
I just don't know if I feel super confident about playing Gronk in a fantasy championship week. The wide receivers, Mike Evans gets the A, Chris Godwin gets the B, Antonio Brown gets the C. Evans seems like he's the only guarantee for targets, as he's led the team in targets in four of the last five, and he's topped 100 yards or scored in four of the last five. Godwin played 88% of the snaps last week. Brown was only on the field for 47, but Brown had seven targets and Godwin only had five, and Godwin had the great matchup last week too. Over the last 5 weeks, no team has allowed more receptions, yards, and scores to the wide receiver position than the Lions, although the Bucs are close and they've played one fewer game. It doesn't help that the top two corners, Jeff Okuda and Desmond Trufant, are now both on IR, so you can fire up your Bucs wide receivers in this one.
San Francisco takes on Arizona. These are all Saturday. Well, we've had a Friday, a Saturday, a Saturday. We're going to have another Saturday game for you tomorrow on the next segment.
Triple Saturday.
Yeah, triple Saturday. This is San Francisco, Arizona, Saturday. C.J. Beathard is your starting quarterback for the 49ers in this one. And
sure it's not pronounced Beathard?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's not. Yeah. But I guess it could be like Ant B Tard, something like that.
Yeah.
T Hard. Let's start with the running game here. Jeff Wilson gets a C grade. He aggravated his ongoing ankle injury last week, but hopes to play in this one. And the reason I'm giving him the C grade is because he does have this ankle injury. And so I'm factoring in this a little bit of risk that he doesn't finish the game. Otherwise, he would be a B grade in this game, and I do like elements of this matchup. Over the past two seasons, in games in which Jeff Wilson gets at least eight touches, his average game is 56 total yards, which is good, and 1.5 touchdowns, which is really good.
Yeah.
So Wilson's a pretty good start here. Cardinals have been middle of the pack in most running back defensive metrics, but they were obliterated by the 49ers backs in week one. I'll note that. Jeff Wilson was not a part of that. Back to the passing game now. Oh, and by the way, Jerick McKinnon, Tevin Coleman, dead to us for a wide variety of reasons, and there's no reason we should even spend time on why those guys are not going here. Raheem Mostert is out. Don't pivot to Jerick McKinnon thinking he's going to get more work with McKinnon out, Mostert out. McKinnon's proven that he's not a factor.
And don't tweet at Raheem Mostert about your fantasy team.
No, he doesn't want to hear that.
He's very angry about it.
Yes, he does not want to hear that stuff. Okay, let's go to the only element of the passing game that you should be caring about now, and that's Brandon Ayuk, who's finishing with probably the second best rookie wide receiver season outside of Justin Jefferson, and maybe better than Justin Jefferson, depending on how these games finish out, despite missing several games. Ayuk has posted over 100 yards or a touchdown in seven straight games. And with this quarterbacking, and is averaging 96 yards over the last three games, Arizona's allowing 150 yards per game to opposing receivers over the past month. That's kind of right in the middle of the pack. But they've kept receivers out of the end zone in three of the past four. B grade on Brandon Ayuk, who comes in hot. And C.J. Beathard's, by third-string quarterbacks, he's highly capable by third-string quarterback standards. But that's it. You're not starting anybody else there. King of the third stringers, C.J. Beathard.
The Beathard string.
I like it.
Yeah.
Let's go to the Arizona side, where we'll begin with the running backs. Kenyon Drake got dinged up in last week's game, didn't get a lot of action. Chase Edmonds came in, looked really good. But this thing could be flipped because Chase Edmonds did not practice Tuesday or Wednesday. We don't know about Thursday at this moment. And his status for this game is unclear.
It's not trending well.
It's not trending the right direction. Kenyon Drake is practicing in full, so we're going to assume he's going to be the starter, get most of the work. That gives him a B grade. 49ers have been gutted by some unimposing running backs lately. Over their last five games, these guys have averaged 97 total yards and over a touchdown per game. Tony Pollard, J.D. McKissic, Devin Singletary, Cam Akers, and that was before Cam had his breakouts, and Alvin Kamara. That's, you know, those guys are getting about 100 total yards and 1.5 touchdowns almost. That's that brings Kenyon Drake into play with a B grade with Chase Edmonds dinged up. And for Chase, if you get a full day of practice on Friday or Thursday, then I could see where you might want to go with Chase Edmonds on a C grade because he did look really good, but you want to feel a little more confident before about his health status. Let's go to Kyler Murray. Faced the Niners in the season opener, and in that game, we got a glimpse of what was to come for Kyler Murray. He had an efficient passing day, but an explosive running day with almost 100 rushing yards and a touchdown. Niners pass defense has been pretty solid over the last 5 weeks. Over that span, only Josh Allen has really touched them in a meaningful way. Everybody else averaging just...
Whoa. We're just going to go buy that.
Well,
okay.
Not everything. You know, not every single time you use the word touch, it's a bad touch. There is such a thing as good touch, I'll have you
know. Touch them in a meaningful way.
Yes. I feel sorry for your wife. Niners pass defense has been pretty solid over the past 5 weeks. As I mentioned, averaging just 163 passing yards and 0.8 passing touchdowns to non-Josh Allen quarterbacks. The toucher, as I guess maybe we'll now call him. What's more, no quarterback has scored on the ground against San Francisco since week 4. And Taysom Hill's the only quarterback to top 23 rushing yards against the 49ers since week 3. So I've got a B grade in Kyler Murray against a good defense. DeAndre Hopkins gets an A, comes in red hot with over 135 yards in back-to-back games and touchdowns in 2 of the past 3. And he's had some tough matchups over those last 3 games, too, that he's overcome. 49ers are allowing an uncharacteristic 167 yards per game to opposing receivers over the last 3 weeks. They've allowed 4 touchdowns to receivers over the past 3 weeks. DeAndre Hopkins likely gets that touchdown. Last guy to mention, Dan Arnold.
I'm listening.
I was worried you weren't.
I'm beaming over here.
He's been fantasy relevant in 3 straight games.
Sure has.
And 4 of the past 5. Low volume dart throw against the Niners defense that has allowed fantasy relevant games to tight ends in 3 straight. C grade on Dan Arnold.
Yeah, so,
it took 14 weeks, but you finally got it right.
So Josh Allen is the toucher?
He's the toucher.
So we need a sounder for the toucher.
What does that sound like?
Brianne
does not want any part of your touching sound.
Obviously.
Season's over. Leave me alone.
Yeah, no kidding. When we come back, take a chance on me. 9 players not normally in your starting lineup will tell you who they are, and we've already alluded to 3 of them when we come back. Unlike our previous Take a Chance on Me, this is...
That had a full band, it had piano, it had guitars.
This was good.
That was good.
It was good. Thank
That's
you.
Like a song that Nickelback...
Soap the band. Oh, Nickelback's a billion times better than what we had.
No, I know. This is a song like Nickelback rejected, I feel like. It's good, though.
You're on the wrong side of this. I'm grateful to... I believe it is called Soap.
Soap?
Soap. The band is called Soap. That sent this song to me. This is original work.
They cleared
that they
it.
They made. This is, we are in the clear.
Okay.
No royalty issues. This is, till somebody comes up with something better, this is our new Take a Chance on Me song. Which is, it's the last week of the year for Take a Chance on Me, so we only got one.
You've got the mantle, at least for the next year.
Absolutely. Thank you again, Soap the Band. Let's go through our 9 players that we would not normally start, but we are this week at the quarterback position, and that is Brian Johnson.
We're going with the Red Rifle, Andy Dalton at home versus the Eagles. Over the last 3 weeks, opposing quarterbacks have averaged 331 passing yards and 2.7 passing touchdowns versus Philly. That was Aaron Rodgers, Taysom Hill, and Kyler Murray. Dalton pretty much deserves to be in that conversation. Andy might be without Michael Gallup in this one, but he still has 2 top-tier receivers. And let's not forget, he's in a contract here. He only signed a 1-year deal with Dallas. And he could still be a starter in this league, I'm quite convinced. So he's and Dallas is... alive for the playoffs, too. So there's motivation here.
There is motivation.
That's it.
That's it. Okay. Let's go to your quarterback, Matt.
Matthew Stafford, 3 of the last 4 quarterbacks to face the Bucs have topped 350 passing yards. And as an added bonus, if you throw for 350 against the Bucs, you also get to throw exactly 3 touchdown passes against the Bucs. Each one of them has its science. Stafford was treated with kid gloves in practice again this week, especially with the Saturday game.
That's the part that worries me. I don't know if he's going to play.
He's going to play. He'll go. He's only 2 weeks removed from a 400-yard, three-touchdown performance with that same injured thumb. And maybe he gets to call his own plays in the huddle this week with Daryl Bevel.
They should let him.
In the bubble.
They should let him. You know, in the old days, when I was a kid, quarterbacks...
Back in my day.
That's right. We walked uphill both ways. Veteran quarterbacks called all their own plays all the time. Now Tom Brady doesn't get to call his own plays. It's bizarre how things have changed. For the fourth straight week.
You're still doing this?
I'm going back to Happy Trombone Ski. That's right. It's because it keeps working. In the past 4 weeks as a starter, Happy Trombone Ski is a top 12 fantasy quarterback. And this matchup is so juicy with Jacksonville, a team that has allowed multiple passing touchdowns in 8 straight games. Mitch loves to target Allen Robinson, who runs all over the field and has got great matchups at every stop, including cornerbacks Greg Maben. Chris Clay Brooks is awful, and Trey Herndon. It's a glorious matchup for Brian. You're taking a chance of me running back.
I got Lynn Bowden at the Raiders.
We got any music for Lynn Bowden?
How would I?
Now, Lynn Bowden is really a wide receiver, but he does he's averaging 8 yards per carry on just 3 carries. But more importantly, he's running back eligible on all major platforms. But I like him. We play him as running back, but he's a great wide receiver. He's a safe play. The Raiders have yielded the third most red zone targets to wide receivers over the last 4 weeks and the most touchdowns during that span. Bowden has 16 targets over his last 2 games. And if you weren't aware, the Raiders drafted Lynn Bowden and essentially kicked him to the curb.
They did. They traded him.
Big time revenge.
So they took Bowden like a third round pick fourth and traded him for like a sixth.
Bologna sandwich. Nothing.
Yes.
So Bowden is pissed.
It's a revenge game for Lynn Bowden. You're taking a chance on me, runner, Matt.
It's going to be Leonard Fournette because Ronald Jones is going to miss the week on the COVID list, according to Bruce Arians. So we get another week of Leonard Fournette. Fournette got 17 touches last week. He rewarded fantasy players with 2 scores, but an unimpressive 55 total yards. That's going to change this week against Detroit. Darrington Evans and Duke Johnson have had respectable fantasy days against the Lions in the last month, along with Derrick Henry, David Montgomery, Mike Davis, Antonio Gibson, and Dalvin. Let's just say this is a bad run defense, and the game script could lean heavily toward Tampa running the ball copiously.
It could. I've got Gus Edwards shooting for a touchdown. We want a touchdown. Gus Edwards has got a good chance at it. Mark Ingram, a healthy scratch last week. In Gus's last 3 games, he's averaging 8 yards per carry. He gets a lot of work inside the red zone, and the Giants have allowed a running back score in 5 of the past 6 games. Gus Edwards. Brian, your take a chance on your receiver.
Oh, are you going to use Lynn Bowden again?
that 8 yards per carry by Edwards is Bowden-esque, though.
It is very Bowden-esque.
No, I pity the fool who does not take a chance on Mr. T. Higgins at the Texans. The Texans have allowed the most red zone receptions to receivers over the last 4 weeks, 12 of them on 12 targets, 100% catch rate for the opposing wide receivers against the Texans in the red zone. Houston's been getting smacked by receivers all season. They've surrendered 20 touchdowns to the position. T. Higgins.
I want to hear your Mr. T impression, though.
I got to practice that. Okay. Yeah, next season.
Your macho man spot on, though.
I can do that ad hoc. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Matt, your take a chance on me receiver.
Tim Patrick has been money near the end zone. In fact, inside the 10-yard line, he's had 7 targets, 7 receptions, and 6 touchdowns. His 7 receptions inside the 10 are tied for Travis Kelce for 6th in the league. What's more, his 13.1 average depth of target is 9th highest in the league, and the Chargers are a break but don't bend defense, allowing the most completions of 40 or more yards this year with 10. Casey Hayward, 7th in the league with most yards allowed in coverage. The other corner, Michael Davis, 14th, and each have allowed 3 scores on the year. Fire up Tim Patrick.
My take a chance on my receiver. I'm bookending the season the way it began with Jonnu. Now, I looked brilliant in the first about 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
When Jonnu came out red hot and your 14th round tight end selection was looking fantastic. Then he promptly hit a series of injuries and they just didn't throw to him for a long time. Missed some games and then they just asked him to block. Now it seems that he's healthier because he's playing 93% of the snaps last week, and he came up with 5 catches, 52 yards last week, his highest catch and yardage total since week 5. In the last 5 weeks, this week's opponent, the Packers, have allowed 3 touchdowns to the tight end position and just over 50 yards per game to the tight end position. I think most of those 50 go to Janu.
That's
I would
right.
love to see him finish on a strong note.
I'm honestly surprised you didn't use Zach Moss as your take a chance on me runner. Just to really bookend
that
the
whole
season.
Thing. And Moss,
Trubisky,
by the way, it's a good
Moss,
matchup for Moss.
Janu. It would have been great.
Yeah. The Moss thing never really panned out through less fault of Moss's and more that they just don't give their running backs much of anything. I think it's a wasted opportunity for them. Let's work in some matchups, beginning with Brian. Miami takes on the Las Vegas Raiders. You already told us you like Lynn Bowden, so does that mean you like Tua as well?
I'll give Tua a C. And a reminder, this is the other
Saturday
game, so
yeah.
You got to get these guys in your lineup or out of them either way. Tua, going to give him a C. The Raiders have allowed exactly 2 quarterback touchdowns in 5 straight games. Tua should get there considering he's run for 3 scores over the last 2 weeks. I don't see a huge ceiling for Tua here, but definitely a safe C. Over his receivers, Devontae Parker, going to give him a C if he plays. He probably will suit up in this one, but he has no proven chemistry with Tua right now. But the matchup is nice on paper for Parker. The Raiders have yielded the 3rd most red zone targets to wide receivers over the last 4 weeks and the most touchdowns. And for that reason, I liked Lynn Bowden as my take a chance on my receiver, like you said, Charch.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly, for the receivers, Mike Gesicki was not practicing on Wednesday. Hopefully he practices later in the week. I'll give him a B if he plays. The very comparable Hunter Henry had a great game against Las Vegas last week, and the Raiders have also allowed at least 4 catches and 50 yards to a tight end in 5 straight games. Mm. So a B for Gesicki if he suits up. Lastly, for the Dolphins, at the running back situation, this is very muddled now. Miles Gaskin should make his return from the COVID list. Bumping Salvin Ahmed back to the bench. These guys have never been really healthy at the same time this year. When Gaskin has been healthy, he's been the bell cow, essentially.
Right,
but
right.
Ahmed wasn't really in the fold. He was injured then. I'll give Gaskin a C here. I'll assume he gets the lion's share of the touches at running back. It's a good matchup. The Raiders have given up the 4th most fantasy points to running backs, including the 2nd most touchdowns. So a C for Gaskin, but temper your expectations out of that backfield. It's who knows what's going to happen there. Over to the Las Vegas side, Josh Jacobs, can give him a B. No running back has cracked 90 yards against Miami yet.
Yeah, which is crazy. I mean, just stop on that for a second.
Yeah.
Think of where the Dolphins were last year and the statement you just made. No running back has hit 90 yards against the Dolphins all year.
Yeah, last year.
What
every running back hit 90 yards.
Turnaround for the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Tip of the hat to Brian Flores.
Yeah. They've allowed just 1 running back touchdown as well over their last 9 games. It's not a good matchup at all, but Jacobs has scored 4 times in his last 4 home games, and he has caught 3 passes in each of his last 3 games. That's insane. That's explosive PPR output for Josh Jacobs. So he gets a B based on volume here. Darren Waller, going to give him an A, even though it's a tough matchup on paper. It is Darren Waller. There's been 1 comparable tight end to go off against the Dolphins, and that was Travis Kelce. And Waller is the one guy you can comp to Kelce, so he gets an A. Nelson Aguilar gets a bench grade, though. The Dolphins have only allowed 3 wide receiver touchdowns over their last 6 games, and those 3 touchdowns went to Tyreek Hill, Tyler Boyd, and Keenan Allen. Mm. Nelson Aguilar is not in that same company, and he'll probably draw Xavien Howard, so that's a no-go for Nelson Aguilar. And for the quarterbacks, Mariota was intriguing, but it sounds like Derek Carr is going to give it a go, even though
he tore
his groin off the bone.
Looked bad. When you saw that injury, you're like, well, that's the season.
It hurt me. It hurt everyone just watching it. I got them. They're both on the bench, though, regardless of who starts. Only 5 quarterbacks have thrown for multiple touchdowns against Miami, and only 2 of those 5 threw for more than 2 touchdowns, and they were elite-level quarterbacks as well.
Yeah, Mariota looked great last week.
He did.
But that doesn't necessarily matter. Under contract next year for $10 million. It's a staggering contract as a backup quarterback for Marcus Mariota. Tip of the hat to him for getting paid. Matt, Indianapolis takes on Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jonathan Taylor's pretty straightforward. The passing game is way more intriguing, and I want to start there. Phillip Rivers has been a top 10 fantasy quarterback over the last 6 weeks. What do you think against a good Pittsburgh pass defense?
Well, you mentioned it's a good Pittsburgh pass defense. You know who the last quarterback to throw for 300 yards against the Steelers was?
Yeah, Mahomes.
Phillip Rivers.
Oh, no
as
kidding.
A Charger.
How about that? What?
In week 6 of 2019.
Wow. I don't know if I'm more shocked that it's that long of a stretch or that it was Philip Rivers as a Charger who did nothing.
Only half of the quarterbacks they've faced this year have hit two touchdown passes. None have hit three. The upside just isn't there for Rivers in this one, so I have him on the bench.
Oh, all the way down to bench grade.
Yep. I don't think that you can play him in a fantasy championship this week. I have every one of his receivers on the bench, too. Hilton Pittman and the suddenly wide receiver one, Zach Pascal, who led the wide receivers in snaps, receptions, yards, and had two touchdowns last week. That only muddies the waters for Hilton and Pittman. Steph Diggs roasted this secondary 2 weeks ago when Joe Hayden sat out. But with Hayden around, the Pittsburgh defense is back to normal. He's been Iron Hayden lately.
He has been.
Keeping Terry quiet and holding the Bengals wide receiver group to a total of 5 catches and 71 yards last week.
That's nothing. Nothing.
That's nothing. Well, the tight ends.
It was Ryan Finley, in fairness.
That's true. The tight ends are on the bench. 2 targets each for Jack Doyle, Trey Burton, and Mo Alie-Cox last week. Mo's on the injury report, but you need 2 to go down for the other one to be startable. And then Jonathan Taylor, he gets a B grade. The Steelers have been one of the best run defenses in the league until they met the powerhouse back Gio Bernard last week,
right,
who took 26 touches for 97 yards and 2 scores. I think the Bengals might have laid the blueprint to beat the Steelers for the Colts here. I think it's going to be a lot of Jonathan Taylor in this one.
Too.
And the Colts need the win to stay in the playoff hunt. They actually need it a lot worse than Pittsburgh does.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side,
well, tell that to Steelers fans, by the way,
really?
Who are desperate for a win right now.
Well, lost 3 in a row. There we go. Benny Snell, I'm going to give him a desperation C if James Conner is inactive.
Correct. Now you're talking.
If Conner is still dealing with the quad injury, he looks like a true game time decision. If Conner goes, they're both on the bench. Snell had 78% of the snap share last week against Cincinnati and took 21 touches for 107 total yards and a score, but no back besides Derrick Henry has done anything on the ground this year against the Colts. That's why he's a desperation C/D grade.
Okay.
Ben Roethlisberger, he gets the C. 4 of Ben's last 5 outings have seen him held under 270 yards, with 2 of those under 200. He hasn't topped 2 touchdown passes since week 10. The Colts have allowed 4 of the last 5 quarterbacks they faced to top 300 yards, and 3 of those quarterbacks threw for multiple scores, so the matchup isn't quite as daunting as it was earlier in the year. Now the wide receivers, which is kind of a mess. Juju Smith-Schuster,
speaking of a mess,
in a non-PPR league, finished with negative points last week and knocked some people out of playoff matchups.
He did.
It was crazy. Chase Claypool had 8 targets, but only 3 catches last week. And then Deontay Johnson had 13 targets last week. So
it didn't drop any.
There we go. Didn't drop any. I'll give Deontay the B here, with Juju and Claypool getting C grades. The Colts have been rocked by some perimeter wide receivers in the last few weeks. Aguilar bit them for 100 yards and a score. Both Kiki Cutie and Chad Hansen of the Texans had 2 good fantasy days apiece each in the last 2 weeks. Also, A.J. Brown and Devontae Adams put some good days up against the Colts in recent history. And then Eric Ebron, he did not practice with a back injury. Remember, he left the game early on Monday, so you can't play him this week. No one in a championship scenario is moving to Vance McDonald either.
This starting any Steeler with Ben Roth, the way Ben looked and
he's
has looked the
shaky
last several games, I don't know that I
think
can start a Steeler.
I think it's Deontay, and that's it. That's the only one I think I'd feel comfortable. Just the double-digit targets every time he goes out.
I know. I think you're largely right on that. I just don't know if I could start Juju or Claypool. It's tough.
I don't feel like I'm going to.
Yep. Tough to get to a championship game and play Ben right now.
By the way, in a redraft league, you drop those guys like Juju and Claypool to see if your opponent picks
bites
them up.
Bites on those and wants to do something daring and potentially foolish. Giant, we're going to finish this segment off with the Giants taking on Baltimore. And for the Giants, there's only 2 guys at the starting grade. We start with Wayne Gallman, and I'm worried about Wayne Gallman here because Devonta Freeman has been activated off IR,
uh-oh,
and he's going to siphon off some work.
No.
And that's bad for Gallman's waning productivity. He's averaged only 12 touches and 51 scoreless yards over the last 2 games. And
we like waxing productivity, not waning.
Correct. And after averaging 80 yards and a touchdown per game over the prior games as a starter. Since week 10, Damian Harris, Derrick Henry, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, James Robinson, good backs, have averaged 102 total yards and a touchdown per game. I'm worried that Gallman's not going to get enough work here to approach those numbers. He's got a C grade. Evan Engram gets a C grade. He's actually stayed healthy all year. And you know how many touchdowns we've gotten out of Evan Engram?
Pro Bowler Evan Engram?
One. That's it.
So Tonyan has 10.
Tonyan has 10.
Engram has 13 on his career.
Jeez. That's it. Ravens have allowed at least 45 yards or a score to tight ends in four straight games, and they've allowed the ninth most receptions to the position on the season. Evan Engram gets a C grade here in the desolate landscape that is the tight end position. Everybody else is on the bench, and I don't even think we need to get into it. Whether it's Daniel Jones or it's Colt McCoy, mm-hmm. you're not starting any other part of the Giants passing game. Let's go over to Baltimore. We begin with Lamar Jackson. Before mopping up the Jaguars last week, Jackson was averaging just 1.2 passing touchdowns in his prior six games. You know, he's been a very inconsistent mm-hmm. passer. Let's put it that way. And a lot more active on the ground, though. And you're here for the rushing, and I know that. So let's spend most of this time talking about his rushing here. Giants are elite at stopping quarterbacks on the ground. They're giving up just 12 rushing yards per game to quarterbacks. They've given up just one rushing touchdown to a quarterback all year. Just one. Fortunately, in recent games, we saw Russell Wilson hit 45 yards, scoreless. Kyler Murray hit 47 scoreless yards. So there's some hope for Jackson here, but I don't love him, and I've only got a B grade on him. I still think he finds his way to like 50 rushing yards, because he usually does.
To be fair,
that's
Wilson and Kyler Murray were the only running quarterbacks they faced all year.
Yep.
They didn't really face anybody who had feet.
Everybody else just stumps.
Yeah.
That's it. Stumps in a shoe.
Mm-hmm.
Let's stick with the passing game here and talk about Mark Andrews, who gets a B grade. He's been much better lately, posting at least five catches and 60 yards in four straight games. The only tight end to see more than six targets against the Giants was Richard Rodgers, inexplicably, who put up six catches, 85 yards on that many targets. So hopefully he gets a bunch of targets and he can do okay. Giants just got nuked by the Browns tight ends last week. So hopefully there's an opportunity for Andrews here with a B grade. And Marquise Brown checks in with a C grade. Brown has been downright reliable over the last month, which is bizarre because he was anything but throw his entire career.
If LJax is inconsistent and Marquise Brown is reliable, what world do we live in?
It is weird. This is a tough matchup, though, particularly with James Bradbury likely to return from the COVID list to shadow. In fact, he has returned. Bradbury has allowed just one touchdown in his coverage since the opening game. And the Giants secondary surrendered just 11 receiver scores all season. That's tied for fourth fewest. Bradbury's going to shadow Brown. So it's a very bad matchup for Brown. But on the consistency, I'm still giving him a C grade here. Hopefully you don't have to play him. Let's go to the running backs. Gus Edwards was my take a chance on me runner. J.K. Dobbins clocks in with a C grade. And by the way, Edwards is also a C grade.
Mm-hmm.
Dobbins has scored in four straight games and has had between 11 and 15 touches in each of those four straight games. So if he's going to get these teensy touches, that's probably enough to make him relevant here, especially if Mark Engram is a healthy scratch again. Then I think you can safely start Dobbins. The Giants have allowed a running back touchdown in five of their past six games. But Edwards could be the running back touchdown guy. Lamar Jackson's a rushing guy. So there is some danger here mm-hmm. with J.K. Dobbins. When we come back, we'll go through our next set of matchups, including Cincinnati taking on Houston. It's a bad Houston defense. Cincinnati's got some players you don't normally trust with Ryan Finley at the helm, but maybe you've got some opportunities here. We'll talk more about that matchup and what to do about Deshaun Watson and his offense as well. When we come back, Fantasy Football Weekly Championship Edition. Stay tuned. Edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchian, Brian Johnson, and Matt Harrison with you. Brian, Gio Bernard 2 weeks ago had his first fumble in 800 carries and promptly got benched.
Yeah.
Then last week, maybe perhaps Zach Taylor realizing there of his ways, decides to turn him into a workhorse back, and Gio paid off. Do you like him this week against a reeling Houston defense?
Yeah, it was a tale of two cities over the last two games for Gio. So I'm going to give him a B, put him safely right in the middle. But he does have a upside here against the Texans, who are a joke on defense, especially when it pertains to containing running backs, because they cannot. Houston has given up the second most fantasy points to the position, and they've allowed a running back to score against them in 20 of their last 21 games going back to last year. The Texans have also allowed the fourth most receiving yards to running backs. So giddy up, Gio Bernard. Tyler Boyd going to give him a B, but monitor him. He's in concussion protocol, but probably should play. The Texans have allowed the most red zone receptions to receivers over the last 4 weeks, and they've been getting flamed by them all year. 20 touchdowns surrendered to the position. That's why T. Higgins was my take a chance on me wide receiver, and I'll even give A.J. Green a C, who's showing signs of life
what
here.
What does that say?
If you're super desperate. I've still got Ryan Finley on the bench, though. Not all of the receivers are going to go off. They all have potential to have a pretty good game, but I like Finley a little bit in daily. He'll be a cheap option. Over to the Texans.
Well, they only let him pass like 17 times on Monday night.
Yeah, but that was against the... They're going to let him pass more in this game, I think. I would hope so.
Almost by definition, they have to.
Over to the Texans side, David Johnson, and give him a B, has given us at least 92 combo yards or a touchdown in each of his last six full games. The Bengals are kind of a tough matchup, though. They've only allowed 8 rushing touchdowns to running backs on the season, and they've allowed the 5th fewest catches and 8th fewest yards to running backs through the air, but they are without Geno Atkins and DJ Reader now.
Yeah,
and Benny Snell looked good against the Bengals last week, so I'll give David Johnson a pretty safe B here.
Yep.
Brandon Cooks, Kiki QT both get a B. The Bengals are allowing 1+ wide receiver scores per game, tied for the 5th most. Between the two, I like QT a little more. He'll face slot cornerback Mackenzie Alexander, who allows a 75% catch rate in his coverage. To the tight ends, Jordan Akins, I'm close, but I got him on the bench just because Darren Fells is such a pain in the A. But the Bengals have allowed the 4th most yards to tight ends over the last 4 weeks. So Akins, another guy I might want to take a flyer on in daily.
Yeah, but I'm done thinking this is the breakout game for Jordan Akins.
And lastly, Deshaun Watson, going to give him an A. Even though the Bengals' secondary has been bolstered by the return of cornerbacks William Jackson and Mackenzie Alexander, they've only allowed one passing touchdown per game over the last 5 weeks, but they haven't played any Deshaun Watsons during that stretch. He still gets an A.
Matt, you told us earlier that you liked Tim Patrick as your take a chance on me wide receiver. So does that mean you like Drew Lock?
Nope, he's on the bench.
Okay, all righty then.
No single quarterback has hit 2 touchdown passes in a game against the Chargers in the last 4 games. And an interesting stat I saw from Evan Silva, Jerry Jeudy's catch rate in passes from Drew Lock, 42%. That's absolutely horrible. That's why Jeudy's on the bench, too. Noah Fant's not on the bench. I'm giving him a B. 11 targets last week, 8 for 68 and 1. And the Chargers just let Darren Waller go bananas last Thursday night. And the Chargers have allowed a tight end touchdown 9 times in 13 games this season.
Nine times.
But it's only a B because I don't trust Locke. Melvin Gordon's getting a B grade. He's very close to outsnapping dinged up Philip Lindsay by a 2-to-1 ratio.
Yep.
And in the first meeting in week 8, Gordon was disappointing in that first revenge game, tallying only 47 yards on 14 touches. Double revenge coming here. Austin Eckler on the other side, he gets a B. Only 62% of the snaps last week, and getting replaced by Kalen Ballage and Air Bear at the goal line was worse. Zach Moss and Devin Singletary just gouged this D just a couple weeks ago. Yeah. Mike Davis had a good day through the air.
I love Eckler in this matchup.
Yeah.
You and I see this a little differently. I've got him as a top 5 back.
I think he's 100 total yards and a score. That's what I think.
Well, that sounds like an A to me.
Yeah,
okay.
There we go. Air Bear, here he comes. He's getting an A grade. Mm-hmm. Each of the last 3 quarterbacks to face this battered secondary of top 280 passing yards. But if you hearken back to last Thursday game, the thing that sticks out is that Air Bear had 2 goal line plunges and 1 rushing score. Air Bear is also the ground bear.
Oh, I like it.
The Broncos have given up an amazing 5 rushing touchdowns to quarterbacks in just the last 4 weeks.
That's staggering.
Air Bear's going to score one on the ground.
Air Bear.
Ground bear. Keenan Allen, I'm going to give him a B. We're assuming the 10 days off helped his hamstring quite a bit. If so, the matchup looks great against a team that just allowed 8 for 122 to Cole Beasley in the slot and 7 for 68 to Curtis Samuel just the last 2 weeks. Finally, Hunter Henry, he's getting a B grade too. Henry is 5th in the league in target percentage inside the 10-yard line at 31%. Almost a third of Air Bears' targets inside the 10 go to Hunter Henry. A tight end has scored on the Broncos in each of the last 2 weeks, and one of them was Travis Kelce going bonkers for 136 and a score. So I like Hunter Henry a lot in your championship week.
Yeah, I do too. I've got I've got a very high grade. In fact, my number one ranked quarterback is this week.
Ground bear?
It's air and ground bear.
Well, bears reach like 30 miles per hour, right?
Well, yeah.
Ground speed, they're fast.
Oh, they are very fast. You can't outrun a bear. People don't realize that. The instinct, the flight, when you reach...
The flight of the bear?
No. The fight or flight instinct is to try to outrun the bear. Bad idea.
No, you get big.
Don't climb the tree when you see the bear. You do. You're exactly right. You open your coat up to get to appear larger
and
with
you
the
yell.
Bear. I think yelling's probably good. I would scream. I'd scream like a girl.
If you saw Air Bear right now, would you open your coat up and scream? Wait, that sounds different.
That does sound different. When we come back, three tough questions, our final edition. Can you go 3-0 in championship week? Come back after this. Of the championship edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. Congratulations for those still alive in one or more of your leagues. Well earned this year. For three tough questions, this is a forward-looking edition of three tough questions because there's only 1 week of play left for most right-minded fantasy leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And we're covering all of this weekend's games right here, breaking down this weekend's game, so I don't need to talk about anything really in this season. So all of these questions are forward looking.
Tough question number one.
You've got the first pick in your 2021 fantasy draft. Based on what we know right now, who is the right selection, Brian?
Well, you can't win your league with your first round pick, but you can certainly lose it. And we've seen that happen to people chasing the upsides of Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara over the last couple of years. I'm tempted to go with Travis Kelce, but I'm going with the safest pick I can think of, and that's Derrick Henry. I'm taking him first overall next year. He has 43 touchdowns and counting over his last 3 years alone. He doesn't catch a ton of passes, but he's just bankable, money in the bank, especially late in the season. And he wasn't utilized early on in his career either. They were giving DeMarco Murray touches and Deion Lewis touches.
Well, I know, but I'm telling you, he was not the same runner he is now.
Well, he's earned it now, and I got no problem at setting him to auto draft at 101, and I'll go for higher upside guys later. He's money in the bank.
All right. Matt, who should be the first pick in the 2021 fantasy draft based on what we know right now?
I tend to play in PPR leagues, so I'm looking at the guys who can run and catch, and I got it down to two guys, Dalvin Cook and Christian McCaffrey. McCaffrey had 402 touchdowns in 2019, around 25 per game, which is exactly the average he had in three games played this year. Cook is averaging 26 touches per game this year. And what do we know about the last guy who averaged 25 touches per game in a year?
He probably got hurt. It was Christian McCaffrey.
It was Christian McCaffrey. Yeah, yeah. He was out. So I'm going to take the guy with fresh legs. I'm going back to Christian McCaffrey at 1-1. He's fresh.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, I guess. The correct answer is the biggest differentiator in fantasy football in probably 3 years straight, Travis Kelce. There's no downside to Travis Kelce catching passes. He's the best player at his position. It's always a wasteland to tight end. People are going to delude themselves, including me.
You won't be sad if you take Travis Kelce.
Nobody's ever been sad about drafting Travis Kelce.
Now, are you as confident in this as you were when you were saying take Gronk first overall a few years ago? Because this was the same argument.
And honestly, it panned out pretty well that year. Gronk had like a 10-11 touchdown season.
I think you can be more confident with Patrick Mahomes as the quarterback.
You probably can. The only reason to think Travis Kelce would have a worse season next year than this year is age, I guess, at 32, but it's not like he's 38. And we've seen plenty of elite-level tight ends play well into their 30s. You know, Tony Gonzalez and Antonio Gates and, good tight ends, Hall of Fame level tight ends, which is what we're talking about. Travis Kelce can play into their 30s.
Tough question number two.
For keeper, dynasty, and empire leaguers, do you acquire Allen Robinson before the start of free agency, or do you wait until he potentially hits the open market? Matt?
So for me, if he re-signs in Chicago, that's pretty close to a worst case scenario. I was looking at all the teams in the league, what their quarterback situations might be next year. The only ones I thought might be worse are the Giants and New England.
Mm.
you can make a case that they're better than Chicago, too. So acquire him now because his value should either go up or stay the same if he stays with the Bears. No matter where he lands, I think you can acquire him now.
Okay, Brian.
Yeah, I don't have much to add, even though he's been playing really well with Trubisky as of late. Basically, going anywhere will be viewed as an upgrade, so I'd try to acquire him now.
Yeah, I think that mostly makes sense. I think there's some real open questions about who the Bears quarterback's going to be. Trubisky's looked better down the stretch.
And they're
going to
give him another year.
They might be tempted to give him another try, but man, I got to believe that they're going to do something to buttress the position in the offseason.
Buttress.
We'll find out. Mitch Trubisky's been targeting him 10 times per game. Since returning, and that's smart. If you're Mitch Trubisky, why not just throw to Allen Robinson? And I think that extra usage is going to play into Robinson's desire to potentially stay in Chicago. Nothing frustrates a receiver more than not getting the damn ball. Look at Stephon Diggs and him leaving the Vikings because they're a run-first team. He goes over to Buffalo. They pass all the time. Mm-hmm. He loves it. And look at the productivity. Uber-talented receiver. I think your guys nailed it. Let's go get him now before we find out. Before it becomes more obvious that he finds himself in a likely better spot.
Tough question number three.
Should Cam Akers be a first-round pick next year? Let's start with Brian.
We're going to see a lot of wide receivers return to the first round next year. It's going to be Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, DK Metcalf, probably DeAndre Hopkins, maybe even Stephon Diggs and Calvin Ridley going in the first round. You mentioned Travis Kelce. You take him first overall. I'd certainly take him at any point in the first round. And then there's still like 5-6 elite level running backs that are going to be available that are generally viewed as more valuable than Cam Akers. So it's not a first round pick for Akers next year, but he seems to be on that trajectory. Maybe 2022.
Okay. Matt.
Yeah, Brian hit a lot of my points. I had 6 running backs, 7 wide receivers, 2 tight ends, and 1 quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, that I think I would clearly take over Cam Akers right now.
15 guys, so you're
I think
putting him in the middle of the second round.
I think he's middle of the second round.
His average draft position next August, I believe, will be end of the first round.
You're probably
but
right.
I'm not taking him there.
Nope.
But here's the thing I want to really leave listeners with about Cam Akers, and I think the hesitation's going to be, I don't want to be part of the Sean McVay ? Rotating backfield, never know game in and game out who the guy's going to be.
We need a McVay shenanigans word.
Let's go back to Todd Gurley in 2017 and 2018 under Sean McVay. He averaged 18 carries per game. In 2017, Todd Gurley was fantasy football's number one scoring running back. In 2018, Todd Gurley was fantasy football's number one scoring running back. Sean McVay's got it in him to have a workhorse back. And I think he's rotated backs out of necessity. Akers does have some sneaky workhorse to him that we're flashing on a very small sample size right now. But and now he's hurt. So you may roll into next year not really knowing if McVay's going to use him as a workhorse back. To me, that's going to be a little bit of too much risk, and I don't take running backs at the end of the first round anyway, as a general rule. I won't take him at the end of the first round, but I think there is some upside for him if McVay is willing to make him that workhorse guy like he did with Todd Gurley. Let's get back to the matchups, beginning with Carolina taking on Washington. We begin on the Carolina side where Mike Davis gets a B grade. To my eyes, Mike Davis looks like he's tiring a little bit. We're seeing more of Rodney Smith. Again, his looks are increasing. Davis's yards per carry down to 4 over the past several weeks. Over the past 5 weeks, he's averaging just 19 receiving yards as well for Davis. He was so active in the passing game early on, and they were really using him. Much like they were using Christian McCaffrey earlier, it's not that way now. But it's easier to run on Washington than it is to pass on Washington. And Davis should still see a total of 15, 17, 20 total touches. Since their week 8 bye, Washington is allowing a very healthy 156 total yards to running backs, almost 1.5 touchdowns to running backs. So that's an opportunity here, other than a couple of injury ravaged offenses, I should say, in that stat. So Davis gets a B grade. We're optimistic he can get something done here. And then most of the rest of the passing game is on the bench, with the exception of DJ Moore, who gets a C grade. Moore is averaging 104 yards over his past 4 games and has gone over the century mark in 2 of the past 3 games. But a very difficult matchup. Moore's primarily going to have to deal with Kendall Fuller, who's largely responsible for holding DK Metcalf to 10 yards last week. Washington is allowing the 6th fewest yards to opposing receivers and just held Russell Wilson to 121 passing yards. It is tough to get anything done through the air. Teddy Bridgewater, obviously on the bench. Curtis Samuel's on the bench. He's had a run of really good games in November, but September, October, and December have been totally underwhelming for Curtis Samuel, and he's got to go up in the slot against Jimmy Moreland, who has not allowed a touchdown all year. Robbie Anderson also returning to the bench. I liked him last week as my take a chance on me player at the receiver position, but not this week. He goes up against Ronald Darby, who's mostly a speed guy, but this is not a favorable matchup. Darby's only allowed two scores all year, and it's got the speed to hang with Robbie Anderson. Let's go to the Washington side. Not many starters here either. Antonio Gibson, if he can go, is a B grade, and it looks like he's going to go. And man, do they need him back. Dwayne Haskins threw the ball 55 times last week. What a disaster. By the way, do you see this? Dwayne Haskins was stripped of his captaincy this week. Yeah, get it?
Yeah.
Stripped of his captain. How was he ever the captain? Based on everything you've ever heard about the leadership qualities of Dwayne Haskins.
Because you always make the quarterback the captain for no reason other than he's the quarterback.
Never should have been the captain whatsoever, in my mind. The assumption is he's going to be back under the helm? Unclear. But anyway, before getting injured, Gibson had scored in five straight games and had seen his rushing attempts and rushing yards increase in each. But one of the questions really here is Gibson going to get the full workload on the turf toe injury, or does he potentially have a setback? If I knew he was going to get a full workload, I'd have Gibson as an A. But because I can't tell you that, that's why he drops to a B. Panthers run defense has improved a lot since the first half of the season. Only Aaron Jones has topped 68 yards in the last month against Carolina. They've only given up one touchdown. B grade for Antonio Gibson. The only other players you probably care about, Logan Thomas and Terry McLaurin. Let's talk about Logan Thomas.
Terry McLaurin.
You wait all show for that.
Yep.
Logan Thomas up to a B grade here, surging in the past couple of months. Coming off season highs in catches and yards last week. Perfect timing. Panthers are bottom 10 in receptions and yards to opposing tight ends. Every tight end to see at least seven targets against Carolina has posted no less than five catches and 45 yards. Thomas averages 8.6 targets in Dwayne Haskins' starts as opposed to five under Alex Smith. So if it's Haskins especially, I like Logan Thomas here. Then there's the sad case of Terry McLaurin.
Terry.
Who's been better in Haskins starts, which is sad. Carolina's allowing just 140 yards to receivers over the past four games. McLaurin's mostly going to have to deal with cornerback Dante Jackson, who just played a big part in holding Devontae Adams to just 42 scoreless yards and just a C grade on the wilting Terry McLaurin of late.
Church, I got some breaking news on the Lions coaching staff. Daryl Bevel officially out.
Yeah.
As is defensive coordinator Corey Undlin and three primary position coaches on defense, defensive line, linebackers, and defensive backs. Lions wide receivers coach Robert Prince will be the head coach this weekend.
That's brutal.
They're not going to have a coaching staff.
That is not bad. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about Cleveland taking on the Jets, Brian.
You sure?
Baker Mayfield has red hot, and here comes the Jets. I think this is largely going to be self-explanatory, but we'll talk about it when we come back. Next segment of hour number two, Fantasy Football Weekly. Please stay tuned. Championship edition. Edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchian, Brian Johnson, and Matt Harrison with you. Brian, Cleveland takes on the Jets. Baker Mayfield comes in red hot, and he gets the league's worst pass defense. This seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah, the only concern is the game script gets flipped on Baker and Cleveland goes run heavy. For that reason, I'll give him a B, but there is
no way. Yeah.
A upside for sure against the Jets, who've allowed the second most passing touchdowns and the third most passing yards. Five straight quarterbacks have thrown multiple touchdowns against New York. So I'll give Baker the A, but again, I'm a
Thank
little
you.
worried about
the game script. By the time the game script goes the other way, Baker's already got his, and the Jets' run defense is really good.
Yeah, it is. We'll talk about that more in a second. Over to Baker's receivers, Jarvis Landry, going to give him a B. Opposing wide receivers are averaging more than 180 yards and a touchdown per game against the Jets. Landry will face rookie slot corner Javelin Guidry. Javelin? J-A-V-E-L-I-N.
It's spelled like Javelin.
Javelin.
I don't know how he pronounces it.
He allows an 80% catch rate in his coverage, though. That's most important. That is not good for Javelin.
No, it's terrible.
And I'll give Rashard Higgins a C. He's averaging 8 targets over the last 3 weeks, the clear number 2 receiver for Cleveland. You can throw a dart on Higgins, but not a dart should be thrown on any of the tight ends. There are way too many in that triumvirate. They're all on the bench. And for the running backs on the Browns, I do not like the matchup for Nick Chubb. You alluded to this earlier, Charge. Just a B for Chubb. Since week 6, the Jets have allowed just 2 rushing touchdowns to running backs. During that same span, only one back has topped 80 rushing yards against New York. Mm. And the Jets have also surrendered just 1 receiving touchdown to running backs. And that came way back in week 1 to your boy, Zach Moss. Like, the first quarter of week 1.
That's right.
Practically. So that gives Kareem Hunt is pretty much the biggest boom bust player on the slate when it comes to fantasy relevance. I'm going to give him a C.
I don't trust him here.
If you need a high upside play,
if they threw to him more, Kareem Hunt, I'd like him a lot more. They just don't throw for reasons I don't understand. As great as Kevin Stefanski's been this year, his unwillingness to throw the ball to Kareem Hunt is baffling to me.
Yeah.
And running on the Jets does not work most of the time. I'm really nervous about
that. I'll say it overall a bench grade, but I can't fault you if you don't have better options at running back. I have to start Kareem Hunt in one league personally. So it's not a great matchup, though, like you said. So temper your expectations. And certainly, well, just don't really have any expectations for the Jets. But I will give Jameson Crowder a C. The Browns have surrendered 4 wide receiver scores over the last 4 games. He will be Sam Darnold's top target for sure. And then to the running backs, if either Frank Gore or Ty Johnson weren't playing, I would give one a C. Gore had 23 carries last week. Ty Johnson caught 6 passes. Passes and scored, but yeah. They're both playing. They're both on the bench.
I think that makes sense. Los Angeles takes on Seattle. And Matt, I hesitate to trust Jared Goff in any capacity, including his receivers, with my fantasy championship on the line.
You should hesitate to trust Jared Goff for anything ever, because that's what I've been saying for years. He looked meh against the Jets last week.
That's an understatement.
That's an understatement. I'm not imagining a lot of Goff teams are still alive, because he's averaging 265 yards per game, just over a score per game. Seattle's changed its entire dynamic on defense over the last 5 weeks. Quarterbacks are only averaging 203 yards per game against the Seahawks, compared to 365 games in the first 9
it's
weeks.
It's amazing reversal, really sparked by Jamal Adams' return to that secondary.
Yeah. Cooper Kupp, I'm going to give him a C, and Robert Woods gets a B grade. No wide receiver has scored or topped 100 yards against the Seahawks since week 9, and that includes a date with the Rams in which Kupp and Woods each tallied a scoreless 5 catches with 50 yards for Kupp and 31 for Woods. In that game, it was Josh Reynolds with 8 and 94. Kupp has only topped 50 yards twice in his last 6 games and has only 3 touchdowns on the season.
I can't start him.
No, you can't. Woods has been a lot better with his receptions and yardage totals, averaging 8 catches and 77 yards over his last 5 games, but he's only scored in 2 of those, so that's not good. And then the running game, Cam Akers looks like he's probably done for the regular season.
Yeah.
So Daryl Henderson and Malcolm Brown compete for touches in the most important fantasy day of the year. In the 4 games when Akers did not record a touch earlier this year, Henderson averaged 14 carries, Brown averaged 7 carries. So signs point to Henderson getting the 2-to-1 workload, but don't sleep on Malcolm Brown messing this up for you, especially near the goal line.
I totally agree. I see all these people pivoting to, in the championship week, to Henderson under the assumption that he's going to get the vast majority of the work and goal line carries, and I don't know that that's true.
The matchup's not great either. The Seahawks randomly gave up 135 yards to Wayne Gallman a couple weeks ago, but no other back has topped 60 yards against the Seahawks since week 7.
They've been a great run defense.
I've got both of these guys on the bench.
I like that angle.
Chris Carson, I'm giving him a C grade. He gets between 15 and 17 touches every week. Also has 3 of the last 4 Seattle running back scores. The last time a running back hit 60 yards against the Rams was Raheem Mostert, who got a whopping 65 yards back in week 6. Mm. They have given up 5 touchdowns to opposing backs over the last 5 weeks. That's why Carson's still startable with the C grade. Russell Wilson, he gets a C grade as well.
Okay.
This is dicey. The Rams have given up two good games to quarterbacks all season. The toucher, Josh Allen, in week three, and inexplicably, Jimmy Garoppolo in week six. Wilson managed an average day in their first meeting with 248 passing yards, 60 rush yards, but no touchdowns by land or air. The philosophy seems to have shifted around the ground game in Seattle, and Wilson's high passing yardage mark in the last six is only 263. DK Metcalf, he's closer to a bench grade than a C grade, but I'm still giving him the C. He'll draw the Jalen Ramsey coverage, and he only managed 2 for 28 in the first meeting, and the Seahawks just aren't passing.
Yeah, How about that for DK Metcalf in the championship week? He powered almost all of his owners into the playoffs, mm-hmm. and it's a dicey start.
Metcalf has only cleared 80 yards once in his last six games. He had 90 or more in his first five.
Yeah.
And Tyler Lockett, I'll give him a C grade. He was the highest scoring wide receiver in the Week 10 meeting with the Rams from the slot, of course. He's averaging a very solid 5 catches and 60 yards over his last six games. He's just not scoring, though. Chris Godwin and Jamison Crowder were also recent focal points from the slot against the Rams. So I like Lockett more than Metcalf in this matchup.
Atlanta takes on Kansas City. Let's start with the passing game, where Matt Ryan's coming off the best game of his season last week, completing 70% of his passes for 365 yards and three scores last week. And that was without Julio Jones on the field. And he completed passes to 11 different players. Even Laquon Treadwell caught a pass.
I think he got a touchdown too, didn't he?
He may have. The Chiefs secondary made Drew Brees look downright feeble last week. But over the previous five games, the Chiefs secondary had allowed a whopping 279 yards and 2.5 touchdowns per game. I kind of like Matt Ryan here if he can build off of last week's success. But let me tell you, on balance, Matt Ryan's looked bad this year. B grade for Matt Ryan in this game. He throws a lot. He averages 40 passes per game, so the volume will be there, and that's part of why I feel like you can start him this week. Calvin Ridley's an obvious A grade that does not require explanation. I'll just note that he's been incredibly productive in games without Julio Jones, and then we get to Julio Jones. Even if he plays, I can only put a C grade on him because we don't know if he's going to finish the game. He's been highly unreliable in these I'm playing hurt games. Kansas City's secondary only allowing 103 yards per game to opposing receivers. And it feels like Ridley's going to get most of those 103 yards. So I don't love him here. Tough matchup with Breshad Breeland as well. Let's go to the running game where Ito Smith takes over and you're going to leave him on the bench. He's the new starting running back. Since Smith became more involved in the offense in Week 12, he's averaging 42 rushing yards per game and 4.5 yards per carry, which is better than Todd Gurley, but still not good enough. Chiefs are average against running backs, which is enough against this group. Todd Gurley's on the bench. Of course, Ito Smith on the bench. Hayden Hurst on the bench. Too many 0, 1, and 2 catch games for Hayden Hurst. Chiefs are middle of the pack against tight ends. Let's go to the Kansas City side, where you're starting Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Tyreek Hill. They all have A grades. You drafted them early. You're taking them. They've been great. You're obviously starting them in the championship game. And let's talk about Le'Veon Bell. This is where the intrigue is in this entire matchup. So Bell's going to get, obviously, an uptick in work with Clyde Edwards-Helaire out. But he's looked totally mundane since arriving at Kansas City. And really, he's been totally mundane since leaving Pittsburgh. His last 80, he hasn't topped 87 rushing yards, which is not that much. He hasn't topped 87 rushing yards since 2017.
I was going to say, he did sit out a year, too. So.
Sat out a year, yeah. And then did nothing with the Jets. Mm-hmm. He's done nothing with this team. Le'Veon Bell's not good. Now, also of concern for me, Andy Reid's going to throw some of these extra carries around to Darwin Thompson, Darrell Williams, and Atlanta's a sneaky good run defense. Novak has gone over 89 rushing yards against them, and only Tampa's given up fewer yards on the ground than the Falcons' run defense. I have a C grade on Le'Veon Bell, and it was very close
That's
to a
generous.
Bench grade. Also on the bench, Sammy Watkins. In your championship, you don't need 4 catches for 45 scoreless yards, which is what he always gives you. He has one touchdown since the opener. Also, that is it. That's it for that whole matchup. I thought I had a little bit more.
No, we don't need any more.
I really don't have anything else in that matchup. But you know what I found was my page from Carolina-Washington, in which I failed to give J.D. McKissick a grade.
Oh.
So I'm just going to back up for just a minute.
Okay.
Because I rewind for those with J.D. McKissick, and you're wondering why I didn't mention him, because he was on his own page and I had misplaced it. Panthers, he has a C grade. Panthers have allowed the seventh most receptions to opposing running backs. Similar pass-catching savants like Austin Eckler and Alvin Kamara have had huge days through the air. So I think McKissick gets enough to get a C grade in that game.
Just
so,
a C? Sorry about that. He gets his very own page?
He gets his own page and it's only a C grade. It's kind of funny. I've never done that before, I don't think, where I've backed up and put a guy in. Like, we could just stitch it all together. That's too much work for Breanne. Not in, with the holidays.
We're she
not,
doesn't want to go home today.
No. Nah. Who wants to go home for the holidays? Let's get to our final segment of our final matchup of this segment. Philadelphia taking on Dallas. Brian, yeah. Jalen Hurts. 2 weeks ago, you never would have thought you'd be starting Jalen Hurts in your championship game, but you might want to start Jalen Hurts in your championship game.
Yeah, you certainly might. I'm just going to give him a B here. The Cowboys' pass defense has looked a lot better as of late. They've only allowed 198 passing yards per game over the last 5 weeks, but they've also faced Alex Smith, Lamar Jackson, Brandon Allen, Nick Mullins, and C.J. Beathard during that span. Those aren't very good passers. We're not convinced that Hurts is a great passer yet, but the rushing quarterbacks that the Cowboys have faced, I mentioned Lamar Jackson. He had 94 yards and a touchdown on the ground, and Kyler Murray 74 yards and a touchdown. So the rushing upside certainly there for Jalen Hurts. Not much upside for the rest of his teammates. I got Jalen Reagor on the bench. He did have 8 targets last week, but you cannot start Jalen Reagor in your fantasy championship. At least
probably,
I cannot.
Probably not.
And I'm worried about starting Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz. I'm going to give them both a C. Hurts has targeted Eagles tight ends an average of 12 times per game.
That's pretty good.
It is pretty good. Goddard has seen more targets than Ertz, but Ertz closed the gap last week. But it's a bad matchup for both tight ends. No tight end has topped 4 catches or 30 yards over Dallas's last 7 games. And wow, that includes Dallas Goddard's 15-yard performance in week 8. Scoreless 15-yard performance. So just to see.
Yeah, this sounds like Hurts. The one thing Dallas has been good at all year has been that.
They have not been good at containing running backs, so Miles Sanders is going to put him up in the A territory. Dallas has allowed the second most rushing yards, 136 per game, and the fourth most touchdowns to opposing backs. Sanders didn't play when these teams first met, but the other Philly backs combined for 94 rushing yards, so Sanders has that potential on the ground and can produce through the air as well. Over to the Dallas running back side. This is tough. No one wants Zeke to play. That Zeke owners don't want Zeke to play.
I got Zeke and Pollard. I
don't want Zeke to play.
The Pollard owners certainly don't want Zeke to play, but it sounds like Zeke is going to play. I'll give Zeke a C because it's a good matchup. Since their week 9 bye, the Eagles are allowing 121 total yards and 1.2 touchdowns per game to the position. Zeke only mustered 33 scoreless combo yards when these teams first met, but Ben DiNucci was the quarterback. C for Zeke. You agree with that?
Nope. No. I think they're going to go 50-50 split between Pollard and Zeke in this game, and they're going to cannibalize each other.
What if
one of them probably does okay fantasy-wise? Good luck guessing who it's going to be. Now,
if it's on talent, it'll be Pollard. Try to showcase Zeke for a future trade.
Oh, I like that. But the problem is they need to win the game. You know, they're still in the playoff hunt, so the Cowboys can't just showcase a guy at a loss. The best running back on roster is Tony Pollard.
Oh, yeah.
Now, some of us told you that last offseason repeatedly. A chance to remind you, Fantasy Football Weekly, this is our final on-air broadcast. We are a weekly podcast in the offseason.
That's true.
We encourage you to listen so you can hear salient things like Tony Pollard is a better running back than Ezekiel Elliott, and you don't want to draft him. Please continue, Brian.
I'm going to give Zeke the C still. I think. Because that's his upside, though. C upside. You got to use your best judgment with what running backs you have on your own rosters.
Pollard put up more fantasy points last week than Ezekiel Elliott has in 37 of his last 38 games.
Oh, yeah. I'm not arguing that Pollard's a better back at this point. Trust me. Like peacock.
Peacock. It's everywhere.
You might want to fire up the Peacock next week if you start Amari Cooper. I'm going to give him an A. The Eagles have been getting destroyed by alpha receivers recently, allowing at least 120 yards to their opponent's number one receiver in three of the past four games. Cooper has scored in three of his last four games, and his primary assignment will probably be Kevon Seymour, who is allowing a near-perfect passer rating when targeted in his coverage. Over to the other receiver, because it's probably only going to be other one, only one other one. Michael Gallup, very questionable to play. So I'll give him a C if he suits up, but he's unlikely to go. But CeeDee Lamb gets a B either way. The Eagles have allowed the most yards to wide receivers over the last 4 weeks. And Dalton Schultz, going to give him a C as well. Over the last 3 weeks, opposing tight ends are averaging five catches and 74 yards against the Eagles, who have also allowed two scores to the position over that same three-game span. And all those plus matchups for the receivers was the reason Andy Dalton is my take a chance on me quarterback.
When we come back, next segment, we will talk through a tricky matchup for Ryan Tannehill and the passing game for the Titans. They've been largely very productive, but the game script is all about Derrick Henry in this one. Can you trust Ryan Tannehill? Find out when we come back for the final segment of the final two-hour edition of Fantasy Football Weekly for this season. Of the broadcast edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. We are a podcast you can hear every week of the year, but the rest of our off-season are shorter shows. We're not breaking down matchups, obviously, in the off-season, and we'll be talking about the playoffs in January, and there's still lots of reasons to continue listening to Fantasy Football Weekly. We encourage you to do so, but if you're listening over the air, just know that this is the final over-the-air two-hour edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. And it's a good opportunity to thank my co-hosts, Scott Fish, Brian Johnson, and Matt Harrison.
Yeah, thank you, Church. I believe this is year eight for me.
You? Wow.
Yeah. I'm getting up there.
You are getting up there.
One of the older co-hosts
you
on
are
the show
at this
now.
Point. Yes, nicely done.
Six for me.
You're six for Brian.
End of year six.
Yes. So it is not easy working this job. I appreciate it very much. And the engineering prowess of Brianne Burdett.
Woo!
Thank you, Brianne.
Thank you. Love you guys. Love hanging out with you.
It is the best. Thank you so much for all of your help. All right, let's jump into our final slate of matchups, which includes Chicago taking on Jacksonville. That is me and my final matchup of the year. Let's start with David Montgomery. It's gotten to the point that I don't need to explain why David Montgomery is an A grade, particularly against the Jaguars.
This is bonkers.
Obviously, start him. He is my number two ranked running back this week. My number one ranked running back we'll be talking about in just a few minutes when we get to Matt's matchup. Let's go to the passing game where Mitch Trubisky, let's give him one final happy Trombonski. He's earned it. He's earned the happy Trombonski moniker with his very solid play over the last month. And he is a B grade. Allen Robinson, A grade, averaging 10 targets per game since Trubisky took over. He's had at least 74 yards in all four of the Trubisky starts. Jacksonville's also allowed a receiver to reach 98 yards in 10 straight games, which is staggering incompetence. Robinson lines up all over the field. He's got very positive matchups everywhere, but especially against uber green cornerback Greg Maybin, who has three career starts and is allowing a passer rating of 118 in his coverage.
I think this is his first revenge matchup against the Jags.
Oh, that's a great
too.
Point. I even thought about the revenge matchup angle. That's very good. Darnell Mooney also with a C grade. He has scored touchdowns in back-to-back games. He's always in single coverage because Robinson soaks up so much defensive attention. Mooney will most often match up against Chris Claybrooks, who has allowed touchdowns in consecutive games and is allowing an approaching perfect passer rating of 146 in his coverage. I like Darnell Mooney as a dart throw this week. Cole Kmet also coming in with a C grade. He followed up his 85% snap share 2 weeks ago by playing every single down of the Bears' offensive snaps last week for Cole Kmet. Unfortunately, the career high in snaps did not result in more production. He only had two catches for 12 yards. Last week, Jaguars allowed the most yards per reception to tight ends, along with 11 touchdowns to tight ends. That's second most. They've allowed a tight end touchdown in four of the last five. Cole Kmet, dart throw there as well. Let's go to the Jacksonville side where there's as you can imagine, only one starter, and that's James Robinson. He's proven to be matchup proof. The Bears gave up 306 rushing yards to the Vikings and Packers in their last two road games. And so, you know, if we're going to give up 153 yards per game on the road over the past month, that feels like an opportunity for James Robinson. Now, he is wearing down a bit, and we're seeing the usage get dialed back a little bit because they've used him so much. But the Bears have also allowed four touchdowns to backs in their last four games. He's catching a few extra passes under Gardner Minshew, which I like as well. He's helping out a little more in PPR. B grade for James Robinson here. The entire passing game for the Jaguars is on the bench. Chicago is a good, not great, pass defense of late. If you're really determined to find a way to get DJ Chark in your lineup, you could check the injury status of Bears cornerback Jalen Johnson, who missed last week's game. And if Johnson doesn't go, you could throw a dart at Chark against cornerback Kendall Vildor.
That's definitely a made-up name.
It sounds like somebody in Game of Thrones. Kendall Vildor
or
to me.
Harry Potter.
Yes. Yeah,
so. Or an Amazon tablet.
Yeah, well, very much. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds exactly like an Amazon tablet.
I got my kid a Kendall Vildor for Christmas. Yeah,
very nice. Green Bay, on Sunday night, Green Bay takes on Tennessee. Matt, mm-hmm. This matchup is fascinating to me a variety of different ways. Let's start on the Green Bay side. Aaron Jones, obvious green light here.
Yeah, Jamal Williams left last week's game with a quad injury, and so Aaron Jones had 90% of the snaps, and the Titans' defense has been below average against the run, but the path of least resistance seems to be through the air against them. Still, DeAndre Swift notched two ground scores last week, so Aaron Jones, easy A. Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, can they co-aardvark?
Well,
this week?
Sure. Why not? We don't have rules on co-aardvark.
Maybe. Baker had 334-4 only 3 weeks ago. Minshew and Glennon combined for 263 passing yards. Stafford and Chase Daniel combined for 307 against the Titans defense last week. So Rodgers will go for 300 and multiple scores, which means Adams automatically goes over 100 with a score. Robert Tonyan gets a solid B grade, and it's closer to an A. You know what earns the trust of a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers?
Catching 11 touchdowns?
Well, catching the ball. Tonyan has caught 89% of the balls thrown his way this year. What's more impressive, he's caught 100% of his targets inside the red zone. Nine targets, nine catches.
You don't say.
Nine times.
That's right.
Times.
And six touchdowns inside the 20. The Titans held the Browns, Jags, and Lions tight ends out of the end zone in the last three, but they allowed seven touchdowns to the position in the prior 10 games. We're not going to go as far as Alan Lazard or MVS. If you are going to go with one of them and you need one, Lazard is probably the guy. He had eight more snaps and five more targets than Valdez-Scantling last week. Because it's the late Sunday night game, and if you need a late swap, I'd go Lazard because he was on the field for 77% of the plays. On the other side, Derrick Henry, he gets the A grade. The Pack have allowed 18 touchdowns to the running back position this year. That's the fourth most in the league. There's a little bit of danger here in that the Titans' defense is so bad that the Pack get up, and kind of like in the Cleveland game, Henry might get phased out just a tiny bit.
I don't know. He almost never gets phased out.
That's what happened in the Cleveland game, though, when they got down by three or four touchdowns in the first half. So that's the only danger here. Other than that, I like them to pound the ball with Derrick Henry.
And that's why I'm worried about the passing game. And I've got a middling grade on Ryan Tannehill because I'm worried about that very game script. The way you beat the Packers is on the ground, dominate the clock, and keep the ball away from Aaron Rodgers.
So it's very tricky because the Packers have been very good against the pass since October. When they faced a team with a good runner and two good receivers, the quarterbacks have had success. And here's a list of those quarterbacks: Phillip Rivers, Kirk Cousins, and the week two version of Matthew Stafford. So that's not many.
Okay.
I think the Pack will have to send seven or eight to the box to try to stop Henry, leaving man coverage for A.J. Brown and Corey Davis. Some open looks for Tannehill. Tannehill does have multiple touchdown passes in three straight. Whether that's because they're dominating or they're in catch-up mode, and the Titans have scored more points than any team in the league this year, so Tannehill gets the B. So do A.J. Brown and Corey Davis, each B grades. Brown has had at least 85 yards or a score in 14 of his last 16 games. That's consistency. Davis leads the team in catches and yards and has become a solid possession receiver with upside. It's unclear if Jair Alexander will shadow Brown or Davis, but Kevin King on the other side is no slouch either. DJ Moore was able to tally 131 yards on six catches last week, and A-Rob had 74 and scored twice against them in garbage time a few weeks ago. And garbage time could be in play here, so I'm not going to give up on the passing game. And finally, Jonnu Smith was your take a chance on me, Charge. I gave him a C grade.
All right. I appreciate the confidence in Jonnu. I hope he goes out of this season much in the fashion that he came in to the season. The final game of championship week will be Monday night, and that's Buffalo at New England. Josh Allen has powered teams into and through the playoffs, but this is one of the toughest matchups of his season.
Yeah. Even
with Stephon Gilmore gone, I'm a little nervous as a about the prospects for Josh Allen in this game.
Yeah, it's a touchy subject for sure. The red flags here are Josh Allen did not score through the air when these teams first met in week eight, and New England has surrendered just one passing touchdown over their last four games, but the Patriots have surrendered five rushing touchdowns to quarterbacks over their last eight games. One of those touchdowns went to Allen in week eight, so he can still do damage on the ground. And as you mentioned, Stephon Gilmore is out, so a B for Allen. I'm going to give Diggs an A because Gilmore is out. Diggs had six catches for 92 yards in the first meeting. That is when Gilmore was healthy. He will not play in this one. Diggs has commanded double-digit targets in five of his last six games, averaging 10 catches for 103 yards
during that span.
He's an automatic A, almost regardless of matchup. Cole Beasley, only two catches for 24 yards in the first meeting. I believe John Brown was healthy for that one. I'm going to give Beasley a B here. His target totals over the last 3 weeks, 10, 10, and 11, seeing about just as much volume as Diggs. And to the running backs, Devin Singletary and Zach Moss, going to give them both a C. New England has surrendered over 400 rushing yards over the last 2 weeks.
They're getting killed on the ground.
Both these backs topped 80 rushing yards in the first meeting. Moss scored twice, and he certainly would be the favorite at the goal line over Singletary, even though Josh Allen is probably the favorite.
C-charged. Zach Moss was take a chance on me worthy.
You could have
peacocked all season long.
Yep.
And there's no sadder way to cap the season than closing with the Patriots, who are all on the bench.
They are all on the bench.
Jacoby Myers likely to be shadowed by Tre'Davious White. That's a no-go. If Damian Harris doesn't play, maybe Sony Michel.
Oh, yikes.
Gets the C grade, but Buffalo allowing less than 4 yards per carry over the last month. Just don't start any Patriots.
No, there's nothing to like.
I wish we could close with a bigger boom with some exciting players, England has zero.
Yeah, that's just the reality of it. And New England's offseason will be fascinating. They've got about $1 billion under the cap to spend, so they can bring in some notable free agents. Maybe the receivers next year are Will Fuller and Allen Robinson. And then they draft a quarterback, or they find a quarterback somehow.
I heard a lot of steam about Hunter Henry is most likely going to be a Patriot next year.
Maybe that's a scenario. There, yeah. How about this angle? And I'm serious about this. Starting quarterback for the Patriots next year, Jimmy Garoppolo.
Right? A reunion.
49ers decide they've played that thing out.
Yep.
The Patriots obviously have a lot of familiarity with Garoppolo. They liked him. And they decide they go back. They go to Garoppolo. That would be fascinating.
The one thing New England should do, or should not do, actually, is just don't draft a wide receiver.
Kidding. God.
Since 2010.
I can't pick them.
All the receivers they've drafted have totaled one touchdown in the last 10 years.
Think of the staggering level of drafting incompetence it takes to go a decade of drafting, needing receivers for much of that decade, basically since Randy Moss retired. And only being able to come up with one touchdown.
Doesn't Belichick have a dog doing the drafting or something like that?
Well, it feels like it, doesn't it? All right, let me ask you this. Next year, as we look ahead to next season, who is quarterback two next year? Patrick Mahomes is the obvious quarterback one. Quarterback two is not obvious. Matt, let me start with you. Who do you believe is quarterback? Who are you going to have ranked as quarterback number two next year?
It might be a little bit surprising. I have two names that kind of came to my brain right away. Josh Allen and the Air Bear himself.
Mm-hmm.
I like both of them. I do like Josh Allen because he's the rare running quarterback who's really, really good at passing. too. And he's got the wide receivers to make that offense work. So I think I would go Josh Allen as my number two, but Air Bear's very close. Very impressive rookie year for him.
Well, yeah. And I think as we're in Minnesota, as much as we like what Justin Jefferson has done mm-hmm. and is worthy of winning the Rookie of the Year award, it usually goes to quarterbacks. And I think Air Bear is going to end up getting that award.
Well, I think we're going to see Air Bear with a new head coach, probably an offensive mind.
If you're Eric Bieniemy, why would you go anywhere else?
Because you don't want to play the Chiefs twice a year.
Now, that would be like the only reason.
That was the only reason.
Right? I mean,
yep. You
know, if you want to be, if you want to have a long tenure as a head coach in the NFL, there is exactly one clear path to doing that. Hook your wagon to a great young quarterback. That's how you have a 10-year run as a coach.
Maybe he wants to be a Jaguars coach.
Well, Jaguars might make some sense too. Yeah. Another team with a ton of room under the cap. Mm-hmm. Ryan, who's your number two ranked quarterback for next year?
Yeah, Air Bear and Allen certainly in the mix. I think Aaron Rodgers deserves to be in the conversation after his resurgence this year, especially if they can put an elite receiver opposite Devontae Adams. But I still would lean the mobile quarterback. I'm going Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray,
the best rushing quarterback.
I think that's
the best weapon.
That's what the consensus will be next year.
It'll probably be consensus. Yeah. I'm on Josh Allen as well because I just like the overall level of play, and I think he's a better passer than Kyler Murray, and I get a lot of the rushing production as well.
We need the schedules, really. You got to really break down.
It might come down to that. Yeah, quarterback two is going to be fascinating. You watch what's going to happen. Mahomes is going to go like round one, round two. And then no quarterback. It's going to go for like four rounds after that. People are going to feel like that next tier is there's such a big drop off. They can wait a long time. Thank you to everybody who has listened over the course of this season to Fantasy Football Weekly. It has been great talking to you throughout this challenging year for everybody. Congratulations on getting to the championship for those of you that are playing now. And as a final reminder, we are still available all season long as a podcast. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Bye-bye, everybody. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.